colleagues and officials from the department. I think we should start. We have a fairly busy agenda, so the sooner we get to it, the better. Just by way of welcoming everyone, I think there is still an apology from the chair. That's why you see me sitting here. It is for that saying that sooner the better the chair comes back so I can occupy my rightful place there. But on the agenda here, we've got two items just on the agenda. And of course, we will, in the agenda, in the second part of the agenda, once we've done with the first, when you look at the, we'll have to look at the program for this term, so that there has been some letters, requests that has been coming to the chair, directed to the chair, about certain matters that members of the committee feel strong that they should be attended to. So we'll deal with all those letters when it comes to the, after we have adopted the minutes, and we'll deal with that, all those issues. Today's agenda, it's, you'll remember the last time we had a discussion, we did some amendments, some comments on the A list, and we've asked the department as well as the state law advisors, parliamentary legal team to go and look at what you said and then come up with the A list that is comprehensive in, enough. So we have that. We want to ask them to go through that in a minute. Let me just say that one issue that has come to me yesterday was a letter that was sent to the chair of the committee. And this letter is a letter that comes from the Department of Transport, an official from the Department of Transport, who raises the constitutional issues with respect to ARTO, as well as RTMC. It's a combination of issues he raises in the memo that he sends to the chair, basically bringing to the attention of the chair issues that he called constitutional concern and that gravitates to the unconstitutionality of our process and the process of amending ARTO. I haven't read the memo that he has sent to the chair, and it was then sent to me. I felt it was a bit awkward to get to that note at that time and in the process, because there was a telephone number on the letter. I telephoned the gentleman, the Department of Transport, and I asked him whether he works there. He said, well, he works there. He works in the legal department division, there where they are dealing with the act. And I think his name is written fairly clear there. Stanley is his name. He raises the issue that he has brought this to the attention of the senior officials, certain concerns that has a constitutional implications, but up to date, and he has also requested to talk to the Minister of Transport, but because he holds a different constitutional view on the act, somehow he's blocked to getting the access to talking to the minister about his concerns. And therefore, he felt that it was important to bring this to the attention of the chair of the portfolio committee, because in any case, this matter is now in the hands of the portfolio committee. It's a portfolio committee that does the matter. I had to fairly kind of engagement with him. And in my own assessment, in engaging with him, he holds a view. Maybe even to say view is maybe so. He holds a strong view around the constitutionality, the constitutionality issue. And I have asked the secretary of the committee to circulate the memo that was sent to me, to all the members here, members of the committee, with a view that some of the committee members at some point we need to engage with that, or the content of that memo. And of course, we would make that available also to the leader of the delegation of the Department of Transport, so that at least we have. I had indicated to him that I will only raise that matter to the committee. The committee will discuss. If the committee feels that he is making a point that is important, the committee will decide to talk to him, whether it's through the public engagement, when oral submissions made, or what the process. The committee will maybe decide to say we will want to hear him directly, or we don't want to hear him, he's a waste of time. That is a matter that's not in my hand, it's a matter of the committee. The parting shot with his discussion with me, he said, well, just that I know, he is busy because the department has blocked all the efforts to talk to the authority in the department. He is writing a report based on this engagement and the act, both three acts that are interchangeably dealt with. He's writing this report, which he will then submit to the presidency. So I said to him, look, at this moment, the president is not busy with the act. The committee is busy with the act. If we have something that you need to bring into the attention, bring it to the attention of the lawmakers, those who are making the laws, which is us, Parliament. I made that point to him. He said, well, if you want to hear my view, I will come and put my view down on paper and come to the committee and present it. The long and short of it, I'm raising this issue because I just felt that it is not a secret issue, because it may come up later. And I would not want to live with my conscience having known that something like this has been raised, and from the principal department has been raised, and I just act as if it doesn't exist. So I ask him, do you know the DG? Do you know this one? Do you know? He know everybody in the department. So I was convinced that he works for the department. He did confirm, however, that he did meet with the registrar, the RTR, to express his views. That's the only body that was willing to engage with him. Honorable members, I just thought that I must raise this, because all these has a bearing one or the other with the process that we are embarking upon. Now I think, Berenice, did you email this document?
Emailed it to members a few minutes ago, and to Parliament, which is in the mail today.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable De Freitas, I see your hand.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for the initiative of contacting the gentleman concerned and doing what you did. My worry is, you indicate that he seemed to be blocked from his input. So, I mean, I would presume that we'd be interested to hear what his input is. But my concern is why he found it so difficult to present his point of view as part of the process. Because that's the implication that you've used. So that I think we need to look at. If that is the case, how many other officials that have maybe some good input, potentially, have been blocked or for whatever reason? So that's my question. And then certainly I would be interested in seeing what that input is, because he may well have found something that we have overlooked. You know, we're all human. So I'd be very interested in that as well. Thank you.
Okay. Are you having the hand up with your policy?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to put it on record that we also appreciate the fact that you share this with the committee, because you had a choice around this. And certainly this is an expression of transparency and also a big way in which we re-establish the honorability and the trustworthiness and, you know, how we should go about with the affairs that concern our general public. So I thank you for sharing it with the committee and reflecting transparency, which is a big quality and a very important element of what we're trying to do here in Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we're going to get to the main item of the agenda. So, I look, for me, a view can't be put under the carpet. The view must be dealt with. If a person has got a completely wrong end of the stick, our intellectual capacity and brains must be able to say to him, based on these things, this is wrong, Constitution doesn't say this, this is what it is. So, because if you block it, you are not helping the process. And I'm not suggesting that it's been blocked, but this is his view. But we're not going to get into that discussion. That's why I thought, we are equally able to deal with matters here if they're put onto the table to agree whether this is a constitutional matter or not a constitutional issue. Ultimately, it is our process, not anybody else's process. That said, now I ask the able legal brains of Parliament to take us through to the amended version of the aid all time.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the last meeting, some of the things that were raised in the meeting, we together with the department and the agency have tried to deal with them. I will just concentrate on the places where we have made amendments in the bill, in the actual bill. We indeed met with the agency and the statutory advisor to try and go through these things and to try and meet the requirements of the members to make amendments where possible. The first amendment that we made based on the inputs that we received last week, there was an issue of whether the president or the minister should make the appointments or the members of the tribunal. We have amended clause 29A, which is on page 14 of the A list. I will also tie that issue, Chairperson, with the fact that there was a question whether the minimum of 8 members is sufficient, and there was no clarity in respect of that draft. We have redrafted the section to read, the tribunal consists of a chairperson and 8 other women or men appointed by the president on a part-time basis on the recommendation of the minister from among persons nominated by the minister in response to a public call for nominations as prescribed. So now the minister will make a recommendation to the president, and then the president would confirm the appointments based on the recommendation of the minister, and the whole process will be handled by the minister. So the minister will advertise in the newspapers and call for nominations and list the requirements and all those things, and then the minister will nominate from amongst those persons, and then the president will make the appointments. We did this amendment. We thought it's important that we retain that the president makes the appointment, because in terms of section 166 of the Constitution, the judicial system, our courts, and then it lists the number of courts, which is the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court, the High Court, the Magistrates Court, and it says in paragraph E, any other court established or recognized in terms of an act of parliament, including any court of a state has similar to either the High Court of South Africa or the Magistrates Court. So, as we have said last week, Chairperson, a tribunal which will be dealing with appeals and reviews, that is sort of a legal process, because now the bill is scrapping Section 21, which gives an infringer an option to go to court. So, because of that provision, we thought it's important that we retain the appointment to the president, because we don't want any constitutional challenge to say that this is a function of the president. Why is it being done by the minister? But we have tried to accommodate the concerns of the members on whether this would not clog the system and all those kind of things. So that is one of the amendments that we have made. And there was also an issue of amendment of clause 11, which deals with the clause 11 deals with the authority who may pay the persons in its employ such remuneration and allowances and may provide them with pensions and other benefits as the board may determine. We initially deleted with the approval of the minister acting in consultation with the Minister of Finance, and there was a concern from the committee members that the minister would have to have a say in this, in deciding the remuneration of the staff members of the agency. And we have retained now in consultation with the minister. So the minister in this case would be the Minister of Transport. The Minister of Finance would, the PFMA requires that he be consulted in any way when a decision regarding the monies of an organization or an agency is made. So the Minister of Finance will still be consulted. And also the board and the minister may not recommend salaries that are obviously above the budget that is given to the authority, which is currently the agency, but we are amending it to the authority. The other thing that was raised, Chairperson, is the issue of the sitting of the tribunal. Let me just get to that clause. It's clause 29G, which is on page 21 of the A list. Initially, we had said that the tribunal must sit on the offices of the agency. Now we have deleted that because of the concern that was raised by the members. We have now said the tribunal must sit on such days and during such hours and at such a place as the chairperson may determine. So now we leave it to the chairperson of the tribunal to decide the sitting of the tribunal. And the other thing, Chairperson, that was raised was the issue of how tribunal will be accessible to all provinces. And there was even a suggestion that we must consider having this tribunal in each and every province. Upon discussing this issue with the agency informed us that there won't be a lot of appeals that the tribunal will be dealing with, because most of the appeals are resulting from the failure to deliver the notices and all those kind of things. Now that everything will be done electronically in terms of this bill, that won't be an issue anymore, because all notices will be sent electronically and they'll be able to track whether the person has received a notice or has not received a notice. I think the chairperson, from my side, those are the most important pertinent amendments that members had raised. Some of the things were issues of policy, which I will hand over to the agency to deal with. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Additions? Advocate Paul.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members. Chair, the issue that the advisor has just referred to in terms of tribunal sitting all over the country, we looked at what we have on the system within the two authorities, and 98% of representations I must just remind members that people will be appealing or reviewing the decisions of representation officers. So 98% of representations that you are receiving right now, they are based on the fact that the people did not receive their notices in time. People did not receive these notices at all because post office did something to give those notices. Looking at that and eliminating the vast majority of those when we do electronic service, we realize that we'll have very few appeals where people will be challenging the infringement itself, the merits of the infringement. There will be very few, and those can actually be dealt with by people submitting electronically. Then the chairperson will look at what is the number and will be convening the people to sit and look at that. So it won't be necessary for them to sit many times all over the country. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Further additional? Advocate, nothing. I see your hand making this way. You say it's fine.
Yes,
Honorable members, there you have it. Honorable Hossein.
Thank you, Chair. I worked through the document again following our meeting, and there are a couple of things which I could have said last time which I didn't, which might be of more cosmetic, technical contribution, but it is legislation after all, and it is technical, and that's why people go to courts, because they dispute the grey areas, and therefore it must be black or white. So if you would indulge with me, Chair. Thank you for the work that's gone into the document since our last meeting. My first contribution refers to page 2 at the definition of date of service, where I would suggest that a sentence be considered in addition to what we already have there as the definition, which says in subsection 2, date of service means the date on which an infringer has, then in brackets signed for, underlined, received the relevant document served on him or under section 30. Now the concern there is that it should be necessary then to also add, following that section 30, to say, or the date the infringer is regarded to have received the document under section 30 subsection 2, because then we close the gate. Because this is necessary, otherwise infringers will simply never pick up the document, and then they have, when they have received this. So it just closes the gate completely. I'll also put it in writing and be prepared to then forward this to you, Chair, to then get to our technical team behind this. The next one is under habitual infringer. Where it's just a matter of consistency in that we say there, the habitual infringer means an infringer, operator or juristic person, then I would suggest to add who is not an operator, who in terms of section 25 incurs and what follows. Also just to be completely watertight around that definition. Just a bit lower down under infringement, also an additional section that I would suggest to read as follows. Infringement means any act or omission in contravention with this, of this act, and in take away and but include, or an offense in terms of, and then we go back to what we had, any, then extend to other road traffic or transport legislation prescribed as an infringement in terms of this act. So it's a bit of an extension, but then it's more defined and more inclusive. Just a bit lower down, where we have section 6, subsection B, a provincial administration that or I would suggest in technical terms should be in brackets, and then Under the same section, 6 subsection C, the Road Traffic Management Corporation, established under Section 4 of the Road Traffic Management Corporation Act 1999, and then or, and then connecting to D, any other state institution. So it just builds that little legal bridge, which is important as a irritating technicality. I would then jump to page 14, if you bear with me. I think it's quite clear that we have taken and accepted the line of tribunal and not appeal, so therefore I find it unnecessary to start the chapter with an appeals tribunal. Why not drop the whole appeals word there and just work on tribunal, since that's in the definition. There's no definition around what an appeals tribunal might be, and we create the impression that it's a separate or another entity. And there's consensus around the table that tribunal is what we're talking about, and that it handles the mechanisms around the appeals process. So I suggest we can drop that, as well as in section 29A, subsection 1, where again we talk of an appeals tribunal, and we can just get rid of the appeals part in that text to just talk of a tribunal. Just a bit lower down, where we start talking and describing about the compilation of this tribunal, 8 could be in letters, or in words rather than letters, in terms of technical text in legal manner, and then persons should be considered to replace men and women, as we have it in other text of legal matters. And then we go, I would jump to page 20. Let me just get my notes. See, I would also... I've prepared notes, so I'm quite prepared to send it through. I've missed the place here on the benefit of having a touch screen. It just scrolled way past where I had my mark. So without wasting any time, I'm prepared then to just forward it as I've prepared it, if you would allow that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. I wouldn't like, you already apologized, but... I don't like to say you are ambushing all of us with some wording that you don't have, that you are strongly motivating to include it. So we have no way of applying our mind to what you've just read. But maybe let me suggest that I think we should submit that information. But maybe the way in which we deal with it, because the process today is to finalize the A list so that it can be published. So I think we should find a way of dealing with it, because there is going to be lots of other process that we can find in the process to deal with what you're suggesting is tightening up the process without necessarily having quite wide open definition that at the end you're not sure what exactly the definition is. Because then it runs away from the specificness of the case. It's cash all phrase. That and will take you up to the legal debate about what it's meant by this. So I think we can find a different way of dealing with that, all those issues, as we proceed, as a committee, as we proceed with the and preparations. Because I don't know from where I'm sitting. I was following you, but you have a lot of wording there that is in your document that we did not have a view to it before. But they are not all lost. It's been submitted and you can circulate it. Now, the question I want to pose to you is that this is only to publish the A list for public comment. That's going to open up the process to go through the bill and oral submission and so on. Now, I want to check with you, if you are listening to me, whether that is this process that you're suggesting cannot be picked up at that stage, or do you want that process to be included at this level, which now it will require that all of us are privy to that content that we have in order for us to agree. I would have taken the view that it ought not lost. We would, because in any case, whatever is published here is going to be subject for us as a committee to debate and agree, going clause by clause, amending clause, and so on. That can still be picked up at that stage. I don't know whether you follow my reasoning, because otherwise you're going to delay the process to all agree with your wording that we need to have a printout so that we consider that before we add it into it. What is your view?
Thank you, Chair. If you can also offer more clarity, as I understand it, in terms of the process going forward, everything is also still subject to a public participation process. So I'm sure when we once get to the real high-flying legal eagles, we would definitely get confronted with more or less the same issues. So I wouldn't want to disregard and discount my contribution. I'm still going to send it to you. And in your secret caucus meetings, you might then discuss it with your colleagues and then consider to pass it on to the officials who would deal with it. Thank you, Chair. But I'm quite happy with even what you suggested too. I'm comfortable with that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, that's with the assumption that you would have done the same. Before you submit to us, you would have done it in your caucus. And that's fine. I think we can take that. So, bye.
Sorry, Chairperson. I think first of all we have received my apology to be late, yes. But I wanted to correct something. I do follow what you are saying, and you were correct. Because if we can start argument, I can also bring some argument concerning the proposals which he made today. But the correction is that my colleague, I think, is not correct to say in your secret caucus. I don't know what is the meaning of that. Okay, if it's a joke, I would understand it. Thank you.
No, thanks, Honorable Fumande. I thought I dealt with it already, so it was a draw. Let's get back to the real business. Now that this is explained, I don't know whether the legal advisor wants to have any comment, further comment, on comments that have been made on the A-list. You want to? Okay.
Chair, I just want to respond to the quick issues that are raised by the Honourable Member in terms of clause 29A. The other issues on adding the definitions, those are policy decisions that I think the agency would have to consider. But from a drafting point of view, the first comment that she's made on section 29A is that we should remove appeals and just deal with tribunal. The definition of tribunal in page 4 says tribunal means an appeals tribunal established by section 29. In drafting, Chair, you're going to have to start in section 29 by saying the appeals tribunal, because you're establishing that tribunal, you're defining it as a tribunal that is established by section 29, so you're going to have to give the full name if you first talk about the tribunal and establishing it. The other comment is with regards to the number 8. Also in drafting, Chairperson, if a number is below 10, you're going to have to write it in words. Only if it's 11, then you write it in words. But if it's under 10, you have to write the numerical figure of the number. Also, the comment on the tribunal consists of a chairperson and 8 other women or men. The member is suggesting that we start with men. Chair, since we are a gender equality committee, we are moving to drafting legislation that is gender neutral. We mostly now start with women or men.
Good.
I think that's all, Chairperson, that I just wanted to pick up on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, you persuaded me. Now, honourable members, can we then sign off on this to say honourable Masongai and then the Praetors?
Thank you, Chair, colleagues, for the sharing. The other matter we discussed was amendment of Section 25 of Act 46-98-72. Section 25 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. It was page 10 when we met the week before last. And today it starts from page 11 down there to page 12. I'm more interested on subsection C. I see there's paraphrasing there, because we raised the issue of the operator and the driver, that in case it is the driver who is an offender, as the car also have to suffer the consequences of a permit being withdrawn. We discussed this matter at length. So I want to understand what is written here in simple terms, because I can see there are changes, but I can't claim that I understand what is in C, Chairperson. As I said, we discussed this matter last time, and we arrived at a particular conclusion when we raised the matter of driver and operator. What does this C now in the almost the final version mean? So that when we say we are agreeing to this vision, I should agree understanding properly in simple terms as to what it means. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Director, I think the question.
Chair, you may, thanks, Chair. You may remember that in our last meeting, I mentioned, trying to find the page now. Under page 3, where it lists, it says, it talks about contraventing this act and any other traffic legislation. And I said, so that there's absolutely no confusion or anything that may arise in the future, that we actually list the legislation. And I see it hasn't been done. My concern is in the future, you know, any kind of litigation and so forth, you can, as you know, with these legal matters, people worm themselves out of these things. So my suggestion is that we actually list the relevant legislation. Thank you.
Okay, the two questions, I mean, the legal advisor will speak to it. But just a light comment on your on listing. I haven't seen an act of Parliament that is passed that lists all the act that has an association with whatever is enacted. It's always said with any other legislation, because at the time of the drafting of legislation, you don't have you don't put something in to see which other legislation has a bearing to this in order for you to list. Because if you list, what is not listed is not necessarily part of it. So that's the catch of the whole thing. So the best way is always being that any other legislation, because its assumption is that legislation that is already passed has a bearing on a number of issues. So I'm not sure, but I think we can ask them, the official, to speak to that. But I'm just saying from the my own little experience. I haven't seen that because of precisely that reason. But legal advice also.
Yes, Chair, you are correct in respect of the off-listing legislation. Just to add to that, Chair, if that particular legislation that is repealed, that is listed, gets repealed, then you're going to have to come to this Act and amend again. So you're going to have to do that process. So that is the other danger of listing legislation. The other question, Chair, regarding the operator, can I, with your permission, Chair, give to Mr. Soletsane to explain it? He explained it very nicely in our meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the operator, it's a person who owns a fleet of vehicles that operate on the road. And in terms of this act, we have contraventions or maybe infringements that will relate to the driver and those that will relate to the vehicle. Now, if the driver is going to receive an infringement notice, that infringement notice will stay on the driver, not on the vehicle. There are instances where a driver will receive what we call driver-related infringements, speeding, not wearing safety belt. That belongs to the driver and it ends there. The vehicle is not affected. In other instances, the driver will receive vehicle-related infringement. Let me make an example. If the vehicle is operating with smooth tires, the officer will stop the vehicle and then will write the driver for operating a vehicle or driving a vehicle that is not roadworthy. And the driver must pay for that because in terms of National Road Traffic Act, the driver has got the duty to make sure that the vehicle that is going to drive is in good condition. But on top of that, the operator will also receive a notice because in terms of the law, National Road Traffic Act, again, it says an operator must make sure that all his vehicles are in a roadworthy condition. Because he has failed to do that, the same notice will go to the operator and the operator must also pay in terms of that. Okay? So these are two separate, there's drivers, there's operators. So in all intents and purposes, it was meant that if a vehicle is not in a good condition and it's for an operator, the operator must take responsibility for that. The driver will take responsibility because you operated this vehicle knowing that it is not good. The operator must make sure that these vehicles are also good. So there's no way, Chairperson, that a driver infringement, is going to go into the vehicle. The operator cannot be held responsible for actions of the driver. I don't know if that is quite clear.
No, that is you are explaining it.
But you've taken more than 5 minutes explaining it, which shows the complexity of it. Because if you take more than 5 minutes to explain something, it means it's complicated. The driver is a worker. There are infringements that are associated to his behavior when he's behind the wheel. Your explanation suggests that there is a same notice of infringement or infringement it goes to dual persons, two people, the driver and the operator. Where does the liability at the end rest? Who must pay this fine at the end? Is it the driver? Who is the worker? In the way I understand it, I want to explain it. There's a worker and there's a manager, the owner. The driver gets into that, speeds, gets fined. There's a problem with the life of the car, gets fined. There's a problem with the tire, he gets fined. There's a problem with the defectiveness of a vehicle, he gets a fine. But at the same time, you give the owner. But at the end of the day, who is actually liable? So your explanation says both of them are.
Chair, as I indicated.
No, I see the other hand at the bottom, but go ahead and you have explained it.
Yeah, as I indicated.
At
in terms of the National Road Traffic Act, you receive a license to drive a vehicle, and you have certain responsibilities to make sure the famous K53, the vehicle that you are going to get into, is in a roadworthy condition. And if it's not, you as a driver, you get punished for that in terms of the National Road Traffic Act, right? Now, because the vehicle is an operator vehicle, the owner is also going to be punished because he allowed his vehicle to be operated not in a good condition in terms of Section 49 of the National Road Traffic Act. That's the long short of it. If it's a driver issue, speeding and doesn't relate to a vehicle, only the driver is going to get punished. For operator infringement, the driver, the operator is going to pay for that. The driver is going to pay for operating a vehicle that is not roadworthy.
No, thanks, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I think what Mr. Sulatan is trying to explain is that in terms of the provisions of the National Road Traffic Act, once you get into a motor vehicle, the responsibility is bestowed on you to operate a roadworthy motor vehicle. Now, when it comes to a fine in relation to that particular motor vehicle,
you are now
a driver. You then need to be charged for driving an unroadworthy motor vehicle. Now the question therefore comes in terms of then with regards to allocation of the demerit points, with regards wherein the driver then nominates the operator of the vehicles for those specific infringements that are not related to him as the owner or operator of the vehicle, but should be ascribed to the operator or owner of the motor vehicle. But at the time of the commission of the offense, because he is the one who is then operating the vehicle, he then gets a citation for operating an out-roadworthy motor vehicle. Now the process after is then he needs to ascribe the specific infringement relating to the unroadworthiness of the vehicle to either the owner or operator of the vehicle.
Okay, I want to go back to because he posed the initial question. You know the story of the roller, the big truck, and the overloading story. And the overloading story where always been on around that area, that the driver gets punished for the sins that is not needed, is the sins of the employer who received the money for the two loading one, but when you get to the way in which he says it's not my responsibility. So we're almost coming at the back spinning on the same issue. Let me go back to the Nassau guy. You have asked this question. You have to address more issues.
No. The poor driver gets more burdened. Why can't we pick up the operator in a case like you are giving a case of overloading of a truck? Why should the driver get a notice and demerited for sins of not his own, sins of an operator? Well, we must discuss this thing and come to an amicable solution. That's not complicated. in legal terms, because at the end, it's not the perpetrator who gets punished, who's the operator. Why don't we make it specific here that these are offenses of an operator, these are offenses in relation to the National Road Traffic Act. But here it's complicated. I can understand what they're saying, but it's getting more complicated. As the other lawyer here said, she understood it in their meeting. Now she no longer understands it. So you can see, and it's only Mr. Tuletan who understands it. She delegated that it's him who made it easy in their meeting. And now it's getting more tougher. So if Mr. Chua comes, I don't know, the registrar, you know, will take time lecturing also. But let's make it easy, Mr. Chua. We want to, we're dealing with the public, because we'll meet poor taxi drivers. That why must we take responsibility for a poor condition of these taxis? Not me, it's the owner.
Okay, let me just say this before that Chua comes in. He's going to help us solve this problem. But remember, this process is our process. They are, at the moment, standing on a touchline. It's our A-list, yes. If we're not satisfied with it, it is not up to them to agree. Because we have to word it, as we see, it is much more addressing the concerns that we have as lawmakers. So, I want to cut the whole long story about explanation and to say, let's word it as we would like it to see, a portioning of the blame to be. So if they're going to help us to do that, let's ask Mr. Still here to do it. And then if he can't do it, we will do it. We will then break it down, write it so that at least a driver is protected somehow by this legislation, by just like, I don't know whether I'm making sense, but no, this is our process.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I appreciate the comments that have been made. My preliminary comments would be this. The challenge in respect of this and the attendant confusion, Chairperson, comes out on one basis. It's an issue that you can consider as one that is related to which comes first, the chicken or the egg, or how long is a piece of string. But to go directly to Honorable Maswanganyi's question and the concern that you raised even before in the previous meeting, you wanted a mechanism that will ensure that we protect the people that are generally disempowered. In this case, let's look at a worst-case scenario, a taxi driver vis-a-vis the taxi owner. To answer you simple terms, we need to understand just the legal principle. And the legal principle is this. There are two types of infringement. It's vehicle infringement and it's driver infringement. And the legal principle then states the driver-related infringements, which are behavioral infringements, will always go to the driver. The employer or the operator cannot be held responsible for driver-related infringements. Similarly, the driver, being the employee, the one that is with weakened power, cannot and should not be held accountable for the employer or the powerful person's infringement. And that is the assurance that we give you. The temptation, Chairperson, that unfortunately brings in the unintended consequences of the confusion is the excitement from Mr. Tsuletsani and Mr. Mutatsing of trying to give you answers that shows you the practical reality there, which is much more complex. I would then further give you information to say that the clarification here, it's very interesting, Chairperson, that the ARTO Act is one of the shortest acts that you have, only 35 clauses. But by its very interactive nature, it's one of the most complex pieces of legislation that you can have. It is worse. We have the legislation broken down into five in terms of the regulations. Regulations are broken down into Schedule 1 that deals with the substantive issues that support the amendment. And then you have the schedules related thereto. Schedule 3 has, Chairperson, more than 2,000 individual infringements. And that's where it categorizes. And the assurance that Honorable Maswanganyi looks for, you find it in the regulation. Because it is detailed according to every single infringement. And it will be able to indicate to you, Chairperson, if Jeff, as a taxi driver, is employed by Mr. Tabisa, I would not be responsible for vehicle-related infringement when this taxi is unroadworthy. Mr. Tabisa must deal with that. But it is broken down according to every single one of those individual infringements. That's why I say, Chairperson, the confusion is also brought about by the excitement from Mr. Tsuletsane and Mr. Tating to give you further information. But I give you the assurance, it is what is included, individually broken down according to Schedule 3. But the long and short of it, in essence, driver-related infringement will be the responsibility of the driver or the employee. Vehicle-related infringement will be the responsibility of the owner, the operator, or whoever is the employer, the one that is responsible there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Mr. Tsu, I think you went somewhere to try and help us to deal with this matter. So you were saying the concerns will be addressed in the regulations. Now, we don't have the regulations yet, do we? We don't have them now. I'm just saying that we can't do any comparison. But I think we should accept that. Now, as you were talking, I was wondering, you were saying it so nicely, why isn't it referenced into the Principal Act? Just reference it in terms of, dealt with in terms of the schedule in the regulations as stated. Because then that will then address the problem that we're having. Just that, because you're not gonna injure the piece of legislation. It's only explain it. Personal time, you heard us. Honorable Masanga, are you happy with that?
Yeah,
okay.
But why did they come here and say
disparities? No, but we are moving forward.
Let's why are you coming about
because it's complex. Because the matter is complex. You've heard that. The Honorable Hom Singh, I had you heard your hand up. It was after the explanation. I don't know whether you were not happy with that.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would want to go back to the debate or point around the listing of the specific acts. And quite correctly, you know, I also haven't seen any act that refers to other acts with a list of acts. But, and this is on page 3, subsection, or section 5 on page 3. But we are dealing here with a very important prerequisite in terms of that section of the infringement and the necessity to add more detail. We're dealing with a very specific prerequisite, and the prerequisite is that we're talking of a particular regulation that would, through the particular manner in which the act took place, then becomes an infringement. And I would argue very strongly that the offense of other acts should be listed in order to, under R2, then make this regulation an infringement. So, not suggesting that we should list the acts, that can't be done. But certainly the offenses in other acts should be listed because we need to convert the regulation to a particular infringement. And that's the basis of my argument, that in fact we should take cognizance of what's written in other acts and we should list the offences in order then to also have no confusion, also 100% in line with the same argument we just had about the differentiation between and the implication which unfairly could hit the wrongful person, hence referring to driver and ownership of a particular vehicle. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Singer, the listing of offences, shouldn't we say that because there is going to be the regulations being drafted and the regulations makes long list of offences, shouldn't be where the place where offences, if you like, would find expression, not necessarily in the main body of the legislation. So the commitment that I've heard them give us is that the regulations will make list of all the offences. May well be offences that is not necessarily committed in terms of Article. May well be the other Act, Traffic Act, maybe Land Transport Act. But the offences will be in the separate section of the regulations which we have asked last week, 2 weeks ago, that will be privy to what is going to be contained in the draft regulations. So I think we can pick up on that issue when we get into the regulations. Don't you think so?
Yes, you're quite right. I just want to emphasize one particular aspect of it. Yes, surely, including the regulations, we might be successful. However, we are also suggesting any other offense in any other act. So it might be an offense that would not be included in the regulation, but since we want to be all inclusive, so based on that, there might be other offenses that are not covered in the regulation which we would want to cover under R2. It is complicated, I do admit.
Now it's getting much complicated.
I think that let's pack that issue because I don't think we should write the act through regulations. Something that is not in the act, we then pack in the regulations. It's another problematic way of doing the act. But let's say we are going to receive the draft regulations. We will deal with the regulation as it pertains to this, what we are dealing with now. Other issues, maybe let's park it, because we can get complicated for that. But I've seen the hand of the fighter also insisting.
Yes, okay.
Welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Although we're not sure participating so well, because we're preparing for sauna, you see. No. Thanks very much, Chairperson. I wanted just to break the ice because people are very stiff. Yes. I went through the appeal tribunal. I don't know, maybe it will be included on the regulation or not, but if it will be included, it will be okay. Because they said the appeal tribunal will be the jurisdiction will be the whole country. And it will be constituted by the 9 people. So when I check maybe the backlog which will happen, because remember, they are not going to be appointed full-time. They will be a part-time members of the tribunal. So the backlog of tickets can maybe make it a traffic jam like that, in such a way that people, they cannot be assisted in time. So I think maybe we must have a clause which gives the power the minister or the president to also in the near future to create a provincial appeal tribunal. Because when we are visiting the act, we don't do it for 2 years or 3 years. It must be for the long goal achievement. So The other thing is section 29G about the sitting of the said tribunal, which is page 21. They said the chairperson can summon any person to give information, documents, or whatever. I don't know if it will be in the principal act or it will be in the regulation about the cost implication of the person summoned by the tribunal to come and assist with the evidence and document, because it's not here and the act is silent. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah. Honorable member, the issue about the tribunal or appeal tribunal was explained earlier before you arrived.
Okay.
That the it is a national body, and we were assured that it's unlikely that there will be a need to have a provincial tribunals, because they won't have a backlog. But the process of legislations and how the matters are dealt with will minimize the work in the appeals tribunal, because they would have been resolved. Remember, the things that goes to the appeal tribunal is those that have not necessarily find resolutions where people appeal. So we were assured that there's not going to be a need for that. So your point was canvassed. So it was in fact was dealt with.
The second one. Cost implication of the person.
The cost implication, I don't know, they can deal with it, but the body that subpoenas normally would engage with the person that has to come and provide information, and they will say, Mr. Honorable Mlauzi, where are you living? You're living in Polokwane. We want you in Gauteng, and this is the day in which we want you to come to Gauteng. We are going to make arrangement for you to get to Gauteng. If you need to fly or by car, we're going to give you that. And then where you want to stay, you're going to stay there. You go there without paying cent. You are subpoenaed to come and provide valuable information. Whoever subpoenas you makes it easy for you to arrive at the venue and time without a cost. And they still give you food. They give you accommodation to sleep, you want to sleep. They could give you coffee and tea and everything that you need. Because you are not hostile, you are one who helps them to make sure. But I think the official and the, I think maybe the advocate can explain.
Chairperson, you are correct, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
I think we have exhausted the same list. Honourable members, can we now live with it, settle it, and agree that with all this engagement that we should agree that it should be published, whatever other issues we will deal with in oral submissions once the time for oral submissions opens. Can we? Can I see a mover? One of the moves. Masangai seconded. Any other views that is opposing that? No. Okay, that dispense with this. Thank you very much, all the people who worked hard with the DDG and for coming to this meeting. So we would do what we have to do. On the other matter I raised, we will engage with you at some other time on that once we have canvassed the views of the committee.
About the duration of Gazette, if it's 14 days, but I'm just looking at the timing of all the legislation. Yeah.
Well, the Parliament gives the rules as to how long it should be advertised. Remember, there's new issues now. So the new issues. So, for me, if you ask me, we would have to comply with the requirement
I think it's 2 weeks. I'm not sure, but you can speak to that.
It's a minimum of 10 working days, but normally the committee publishing all the official languages, so it depends on the last day that the advert is going to be in the regional newspaper. So we are, it's 10 working days, but it can be a 3 week period depending on the last day of the advert. Provisionally the closing date for public submissions are set for the 10th of March for the committee to have those available. Yeah.
That is done for that issue. Then we go to the next item, the minutes, and of course the program.
Well, you're welcome to observe the proceeding of the committee if you like, but you're also welcome to leave because we're done with the item number one. So you're welcome to be excused. Okay. As you leave, we will talk to you about the draft regulations. So that you know more or less when you get there.
Why is that?
Yeah. No, it's fighting there.
That's why there are 8 bouncers who are in the hospital. We're not playing.
Is the purpose not damaged?
We came with a plan of beating.
Something like this.
Yeah.
Is the purpose not damaged?
Yeah. The balls were too entertaining there. Was only look checking because whether they will produce or not. Then we can put you in suit.
Honourable members, let's just go through this quickly. We can do a quick job with it. There's two sets of minutes. Is it? Yeah, two sets of minutes. The first one is the November 29, 2016. Page 1, any correction on page 1? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Okay, no amendment, no amendment, any mover? Honorable Masanga moves. And the fighter seconded. So dispense with that.
Was he there?
Yes.
The minutes of the 31st of January,
oh, yeah, it's
2017.
After giving you my vote. Okay.
Page 1. Page 1. Page 2, page 3, this is the, we are dealing with Arthur issue, page 4,
before you move, I submitted an apology on the 31st of January, and don't see myself here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. We will, the apology will be accordingly recorded.
With that amendment, Chair.
Now we'll cover moves with amendment. Now we'll display this second unit. At the stand of the minute. Thank you very much. We'll go into the program. But before maybe we get to the program, I don't know what our members have been able to receive the email that we sent, that Jolie sent through to them. This is in relation to the subject matter of Arto and comments. You have now got that document in your position.
I'm not sure. We'll have to study it.
Okay. All right. Why don't we do this? We're not going to necessarily have to make a decision today. You will read it at the next meeting of the committee. We can then discuss what is our view on that. It's been emailed to all members according to the secretary to the committee. Okay. Let's move away and come back to the program. You don't have a page in front of you.
Hey. Why
you wrote here?
Yeah, we'll make that determination at the next meeting, next Tuesday. Program, Valerie, can you please walk us through? Now,
you would remember in my opening comments, I indicated that there's two letters that were received by the secretary to the committee. And both of those letters are the author of the Honorable Deflators. The Honorable Deflators has requested that a matter be put onto the program of the committee or the agenda for the committee to consider. I had suggested that because the letter was written as almost an urgent matter, I suggested that that issue would be discussed together with the program of the committee so that we see when can we ask the department to come, because essentially he was asking that the department should come and explain certain things to the committee. So one issue is RAF, the problem of RAF that he raised in the letter, last letter. And the first letter was the issue about festive season program and road fatalities. The fact that there's been 5% increase, that the committee needs some department to come and prevent. Why is it been an increase? So I then suggested that maybe it's a program issue. It's a matter of that we need to look at in the context of the program, what is it that we want the department to do, so we put that into a program so that it's programmatic, it's not necessarily determined by a letter there, and letter there, and telephone there, and telephone there.
Yes, one-on-one.
Honorable Freitas.
Chair, thank you first of all for indulging me in my letters. I'm happy that it gets programmed. As long as it gets programmed, I think we discuss it, because I think we all agree it's a very serious issue. So thank you for accommodating me.
Thank you, Chairperson. On that matter that we're talking about, Chair, I would like to be reminded whose prerogative is it to decide on the matters that must be in the program. Is it not the prerogative of the chairperson together with the secretariat to decide on the matters? I'm afraid to get into somebody's space who's not ours as a committee. Whose prerogative is it to prioritize agenda items or any program of the committee? Thank you, John.
As you see, I'm baffled by that, because it is, I don't know the rules and the regulations of the chair, because I'm just interim here. I don't know how they go about deciding on the program, but perhaps what I thought it was useful, that the committee, because the program is the committee's program, and maybe the initiator of the program, but we need to sign off on it. We need to include the things that we think are relevant for the committee to include, and that we'd rather do that, because even the chair and the secretariat, if they were to do the program, they still have to bring it here for us to agree with the program. So either way, we're not necessarily going to be trembling on anybody's toes if we were. For an example, now we have a program in front of us. We now have the right to say what is it that we agree here, what is it that we don't agree. So I think in that case, Honorable Kabo, it is still the right space for us to bring issues for the consideration of the committee to be included in the program. And I'm choosing the word to consideration. It must be considered by the committee that it's important enough for us to be able to put in the program. Honourable.
So, Chair, so just to clarify to the other members, that it was a humble request, presenting to the chair of an issue that I believe we should discuss.
So, and I think you're right. Obviously, we have to decide on a program as a committee. So it's really just a request as a member of this committee. Thank you.
I see the nodding. Everybody's nodding, but there's nothing comes out of the nodding. It's just a head nodding, nodding. So should we say, therefore, if that's the nodding that is giving permission, that the secretary should look at this program and see how to factor, because we certainly can't sit here and say this next week or the week after next. She must now sit down and say, in this program, where can we locate the issue about RAF and the issue of arrival life. But I don't see anybody objecting to having reason about that. Yeah, Honourable Debaters.
Chair, I think the reason why the committee is not saying anything is because we're actually not sure where to go to from now. Because I see that there is a program here listed already. And if I may, while I'm on the floor, just to ask, because I see in some of the dates in March, it indicates a full day. But based on other programs I've received from the plenaries, we have plenaries on those days. So I can see Valerie shaking her head, so there must be a change in. Because according to what I've got in my diary, there are going to be plenaries on those days which would clash, and I suspect the House Chairs, my experience is they don't usually give us permission, unless it's something very special, which we don't usually have. And then while I'm on the floor, originally we had scheduled on a trip abroad, and obviously that's all changed. Is that going to be happening as well, or is it on hold? What is the situation there? And the reason I ask is because there are logistics involved in doing that, and I would hate it for us to do the same old thing in that everything is left to last minute, and things like official documentation and so forth is required as a rush. So perhaps we'll give you clarity there. Thank you.
Okay. Let's allow the Secretary of the Committee to just walk us through the report, the program.
Mm-hmm. So members, in terms of the program, which is still in draft form for consideration, there are certain matters that in terms of practice and in terms of instruction to the administration that needs to be prioritized, for example, legislation, and the court expenditure. So in terms of this program from next week, there are the areas that are going to be, that need to be prioritized is the third court expenditure of the department. Normally that meeting takes a lot of time, so that's why there's only one agenda item. Then there was a new bill that was tabled by the department, the Road Accident Fund Amendment Bill. That is a suggestion that the committee gets a briefing on that day. Normally the briefing on bills doesn't take a long time, so if members want to factor in an additional agenda item, maybe on Road Accident Fund, then acting chair and members, that will be a good day. There will be space on that day for that. Because the briefing on the bill won't take that much time. Then on Tuesday, the 7th of March, there was a suggestion raised by the content advisor to have a briefing on PRASA and the modernization program, as well as the increased vandalism. There was a decision taken by the committee previously that there would be quarterly report back on the PRASA matter, and also in terms of experience, that meeting normally takes a long time, so I wouldn't suggest any other agenda item on that day. Then on the 14th the committee would of March, the committee would have feedback already, written submissions on ARTO. So on that day the House is sitting, so there's only a morning session on for the committee to go for the submissions, and then members will see from the 22nd of March till the 30th of March, they've held their meetings on the bill. That is because in terms of the current draft program for Parliament, that period is set aside for committees and oversight, so the committee can sit the whole day. So in terms of the other agenda item to have a briefing on the fatalities, may I suggest that a Friday morning is set aside for that meeting, because that is the only other time members that is available, unless it happens on the 14th of March. Mr. Ramaswamy, the issue was raised about the study tour. A letter was received, which I will circulate to members, that committees with legislation need to prioritize legislation. The committee is basically grounded for a period, yeah, unfortunately. I will email that letter as well.
No, you're welcome to comment, Honorable Spoo. You want to say something?
No.
No, the quick one. My comment on the 7th of March, there's a PRASA briefing. There's an outstanding briefing that we were supposed to have received last September about the status of Metro Rail. We then said we'll have to reschedule it for the, you remember the long two-day board meeting where we did not even get to discuss the Metro Rail because of the issues of the board that we were confronted with. So that issue must be programmed. I know in the metro in the Western Cape, there continue to be a number of problems with regard to metro. Cancellation, delays, spare parts not available, unable to repair trains, so because of the decision to centralize this thing. So I think we need to have that. Now, PRASA, I don't know whether the subject here can't be clearly metro in terms of metro ability for metro to do what it has to do. Cost modernization, using what modernization is a good term, but that's 2021. It's far away. We're neglecting the things that are happening on a daily basis. We're having our eyes in 2021, but the things are falling apart now. So I think we should pay attention much more on what is happening, at least maintaining what we have until we get the new train. So maybe just tweak that thing around. Because if once you say modernization, they're going to come with a presentation and we're going to all be lost in the detail of modernization and terminologies and stuff and not have time to deal with the real crux of the matter, the metro rail. Okay. The overseas trip and the issue about grounded, being grounded, we will see the letter when it comes, but it can't be kind of arbitrary decision that the committee is grounded because of legislation. The committee doesn't deal with legislation every day. For an example, we have this legislation, there's 3 weeks where the list there is going to be published for public comment. So if we use the term loosely, the committee must focus on that. So that means we will have to wait until the legislation is here before we undertake a particular trip. And if the committees have many legislation on the table, what does that mean? Does it mean the committee is never going to go on study tour for the next 5 years? And who's making this decision for that to happen? It's just simply kind of somebody making decisions like that. It can't be fine. It can't be.
for the very fact that we're dealing with the legislation, you need to have a study tour to see the best practice, to see other countries' legislation on the matter that they're dealing with. So we can't be locked up here and say that we are here, all the experience is here. Other people have dealt with the matters that we're dealing with in legislation. So why can't we, so I just think that I will report this to the chair when she's back, that I don't think that we can accept something like that.
No, Chair, thank you. Thank you for welcoming me back, Chair. Chair, I didn't want to speak, but this forced me to speak. Indeed, I guess the issue of trust with the modernization, we can be able to shift it on another time, but deal with real, you know, core matters that are troubling trust. Remember, Chair, we said we must also got update in terms of whether the board members are paying the money or not. It's time we can see that they pay back the money or what is happening. But not that only, also there are other issues that were also left hanging. The issue of the train being banned, the cables being cut, and a lot of issues. So that I think we must be able, and you know, also get an update in terms of what happened with the trains, because we also got, you know, complaints from, you know, public that there are no trains are insured. What is happening? We must get updates about that so that at least we can be able to see how do we respond towards it. But Chair, the issues that we are getting around the issue of the international trip, why should other committees take international trip while they've got also bills, but they are not being blocked? Unless we are blocked for a specific reason, we must be told. And the person that also gives us this thing must come and tell us here that why is he blocking us. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Deputy.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted just to reinforce. I've been on many committees in this parliament and in other legislatures. And in fact, we were preparing legislation and we went on oversight trips to enhance that legislation. So as you say, Chair, quite rightly, who makes these decisions? I suspect it's official somewhere. The point of going on these trips is to enhance this legislation, not to sit just in these rooms and listen to people and learn best practices and apply it locally. So I have a big problem with that. You know, specifically now when we've got a crisis in France, so we've got all these things going on. This was focusing on rail, and that should be, and it's a government policy, the backbone of public transport, moving goods and people on rail. That's been shown internationally, that's what works. And the reason to go to these places is to see how they've done it, and we can emulate that. So I really am very confused at why they're saying that, and I urge you, if I have, I'm sure my colleagues would agree, that you push it, because unfortunately the chair isn't around and you're our acting chair, that you take us further. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to add on to what my previous colleague said around specific issues like PRASA and so on. And a suggestion to you, Chair, since you're doing an excellent job, can't we pre-decide on specific topics, because we really need to, and I can support what you said, we need to get to specifics. We are inundated and my inbox really is cluttered with emails and complaints about service, and I've been facilitating a lot of occasions and meetings in an effort to try and understand, and it's really difficult. It's unfair to our commuters. And it's really unfair to our PRASA and Metro Rail specifically's management. Metro Rail specifically, they are trying their utmost best to try and make things work. And also in support of what they are trying to do, really to specify, before we ask PRASA to come, but to specify particular issues and aspects that we want them to comment on. And we understand that these things can't be solved overnight, but it's coming on for a long time already. So what are the plans? Because we need information to also then convey back to commuters in order to maintain that very important source of revenue, which we also need in terms of support, not just flow of funding. Thank you.
Okay, I think we all agree. I mean, so I think the point that everybody is making is basically a point to say it's no rationale for somebody to just simply write a letter and say everybody's transport is grounded at the back of saying there's legislation and you can't go anywhere. It doesn't make sense. That issue. I mean, for it's now 2017. We have, as Parliament and in this committee, have an oversight responsibility on PRASA. There's 51 billion that was to go and build a factory and also do the train set in Brazil. We have been saying, when are we going to follow the money? When are we going to see what is actually happening with this money? And it can't be justified as an argument that we can't, that is not important. 151 billion was put aside for that. PRASA in the next 10 years is going to be spending 172 billion rand on this modernization. So what is our responsibility? Just to sit here? To get officials come and tell us we're manufacturing train set in Brazil. We don't even have a sense what is happening. I think it would be irresponsible for a committee of parliament to do that. I think the auditor general, if you were to find us that we are not doing the proper oversight, we will fight with him, but he'll be correct to say you guys are not doing what you're supposed to do. So I think that maybe what we can do, we can also ask the researcher to do some little research. If we're talking about legislation that we're busy with, even those that are in the pipeline, which of these countries has the best legislation around what? For an example. So that when we talk about study talk, we also link the legislation to the motivation of what we want to achieve. So it's not necessarily just we want on to go on the excursion, go on holiday. So I think if you can help us with that, particularly around the legislation, particularly in terms of countries, so that we can say, here is a piece of legislation that comes that we want to go and interact. So I think that will be useful, including that motivation must include this thing about the PRASA and the manufacturing at Brazil and Ostom in another country. So we present the case, which is well motivated with facts. Okay, so that's, we dispense with that item. Well, honorable members and committee, I think that was the last item. So Valerie will then amend the program. We will look at the program, we'll receive it as amended by our next meeting for us to basically adopt. Okay, so that concludes.
Sure. Yes. Can this matter come back next week here? Yeah. This one of international. Can you get feedback about this, the international study tour?
Yeah, we will get
next week.
Next week.
Yeah.
So why don't we say next week? Let's motivate this guy to this thing. Let's say next week we would expect that our researcher would give us something that backs up our overseas trip in terms of the study where we want to go. So that we don't just discuss the principle, we discuss it with areas to visit and specific area to visit. That we'll get next week.
Yeah, Honourable
Chair. I'm saying, Chair, yourself and the researcher and the secretary of the committee, go and deal with this matter. Next week, we want to get a feedback positive to say what is happening. If there's a challenge, bring that person, must come and account to this committee to say why is he refusing us to go overseas. We can't say next week we're going to get a research until when. You've got the whole week, Chair, until Friday. We're giving you that responsibility.
I'm seconding, Chair.
Honourable members, that concludes, that brings us to the end of our meeting. We want you loud and clear. The meeting is adjourned until next week. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I request us to remain here.
I know.
And then they're going to send the company.
Yeah. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
Why?
But then I'm a man. I'm a man. Hey,
yeah.
I'm a man. Hey, I'm a man. I'm a man.
What's that guy? That's it. Yeah, I'm keeping the movie.
I'm going to watch the shots.